Paramahamsa Parivraja Kacharya Sutra Sutra Sri Srimada Savangri Sisi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Raja Granta Srima Bhagavatam Ki Samvita Bhakta Vrindagi Itai Go Primanandi. All glories to the seven devotees, all glories to Sri Shukra and Gauranga. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sareva Puryama Dhubhuk Panchaleshu Swaparshadhai Upanitam Balam Grinan Strijito Navidha Bhayam Sareva Puryama Dhubhuk Panchaleshu Swaparshadai Upanitam Balam Grinan Strijito Navidha Bhayam. Sareva Puryama Dhubhuk Panchaleshu Birinci Tom. Bayhan. Anceleşi saparışadayi. Obani tambalem grinnan. Srijito navidhad bhayam. Sareva puryam adubhuk. Panchalishu saparishadai. Obani tambalem grinnan. Strijito navida bhayam sa hi eva certainly puryam within the city madhubhuk enjoying sex life panchaleshu in the kingdom of panchala five sense objects swaparishadhai along with his followers, Upanitam brought Balim taxes, Grinan accepting, Strijitaha conquered by women, Na did not, Avidat understand, Bhayam fear of death. Translation of Purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation, King Puranjana collected taxes in the city known as Panchala and thus was able to engage in sexual indulgence. Being completely under the control of women, he could now understand that his life was passing away and that he was reaching the point of death. Purport, government men, including kings, presidents, secretaries, and ministers, are in a position to utilize taxes collected from the citizens for sense gratification. It is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam that in this Kali Yuga government, men, Rajanyas, and those connected with the government, as well as exalted government ministers, secretaries, and presidents, will all simply collect taxes for sense gratification. The government is top-heavy, and without increasing taxes, the government cannot maintain itself. When taxes are collected, they are utilized for the sense gratification of the government officials. Such irresponsible politicians forget that there is a time when death will come to take away all their sense gratification. Some of them are convinced that after life, everything is finished. This atheistic theory was conceived long ago by a philosopher called Charvaka. Charvark recommended that man should live very opulently by either begging, borrowing, or stealing. He also maintained that one should not be afraid of death, the next life, the past life, or an impious life, because after the body is burned to ashes, everything is finished. This is the philosophy of those who are too much materially addicted. Such philosophizing will not save one from the danger of death, nor will it save one from an abominable afterlife. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Om Agyanta Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Litam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishnam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vanchakaputurubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyareva Chapatitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. I didn't prepare, so I don't know what to really speak. I saw a news article yesterday on Yahoo about a Australian business, how you say, magnate or something like that. He was 94 years old. And he was getting married to his fifth or sixth wife. and who was about 30 years younger than him, minimum. And in the article, he said that his desire is to have at least 5 or 6 more kids. His wife or his fiance, she kind of laughed it off. She said, "I'm not so young anymore." And I was thinking, neither is he. But he was. It was extraordinary. His body's completely deteriorated. You know, he's a $4.7 billion. You know, so he's like one of the richest men in the world. And he was thinking like this: that I just want 5 or 6 more kids. And so the illusion is so thick. Divide the world. The illusion is very thick. Maya is very strong. Maya has 2 potencies, the throwing potency and the covering potency. The covering potency makes it appear that all these things are quite normal. So as a result of being covered over by Maya, even a worm in stool feels very much satisfied with his life. And he cannot perceive that time is stealing away everything. So it is imperative that the jiva becomes Mahatma if he wants to get out of the bondage of material existence. Without becoming a Mahatma, the word Mahatma means broad-minded living entity, Udharadi. It's like you know this verse, akama sarva kamo va moksha kama udharidihi tivena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. So whether a living entity is without material desires, means only the desire to serve Krishna, or he's filled up with material desires, sarva kama, he has all the desires, or he has a desire for liberation. If he is udharidihi, di means intelligence, if his intelligence is broad, then tivrena bhakti yogena, then he will worship Krishna. Because it is only Krishna who can actually bestow the fruit of anything to the jiva, either through his karmas or by his own merciful, merciful nature, dispensation was the word I was looking for. So if one is udaridihi, he worships Krishna, understanding that he's not able to fulfill any of his own desires. So it's essential that we become udaridhi, or we become mahatma. It's the same word, essentially, broad-minded. Otherwise, the other situation is duratma. Duratma means crippled-minded. So the jiva is crippled by his misconception, or misconceptions. That is the crippling effect. So if you have one misconception, that one misconception can keep all your energy directed in the wrong way. Just one misconception. Just like if you think you left your keys on the first floor and you actually left it on the third floor, that misconception that I left it on the first floor keeps all my energy looking only on the first floor. And I never even think to look on the third floor because of that one misconception. Now if I have 2 misconceptions, then I have all my energy directed the wrong way and it's splayed. And as a result of having more splayed intelligence, bahushaka hi anantascha, the intelligence is splayed by unlimited material desires, then it becomes more and more weak and unable to actually understand his precarious situation. In order for the conditioned soul to get out of the material realm, he has to have a strong intelligence. So as long as the intelligence becomes splayed, then it becomes more and more weak and unable to understand very simple truths of spiritual life. Sometimes we wonder why we're having such hard time preaching to the modern men. One reason is because they have a misconception that they are their material body, and that this world is theirs for the taking. But then that misconception is, they have several of them, so their energy is splayed. So as a result of having splayed intelligence,
The intelligence is very weak. If it was like just one misconception, you know, it'd be easier actually to address them. But because it's tons of misconceptions and all the energy is being directed in so many ways by those tons of misconceptions, then their intelligence has become very, very weak. And therefore, it is very, very difficult to explain even the most simple truths about spiritual life. Like, you're not this body. It's not that difficult to understand. Not very difficult. But very difficult for them to understand because their intelligence is very weak. So then, just like this is mentioned, Bahu Shastri, Bahu Vakye, Chitte Brahmahai, Sadhya Sarana Shesha Nahai Nishchai, that if one becomes a bookworm, Bahu Shastri becomes a bookworm, reading many books, Bahu Vakye, hearing many commentaries from different persons, hearing their various opinions, then the only result that happens from that, Chitte Brahmahai, the heart, the consciousness becomes completely bewildered. And as a result, Sadhya Sarana Shesha Nahai Nishchai, they cannot understand what is the real goal of life and what is the means to attain it. So you'll discover by speaking with the people of this world, they're becoming more and more bewildered about what is the actual purpose of the whole material existence. I was talking to one young man yesterday. He was practically on the verge of tears because of having read so many books, having done so many things, gathered so much experience in the world, and realizing that he is more bewildered than he's ever been. And as a result of being more bewildered than he's ever been, unable to trust anything anymore, kind of coming to the conclusion that maybe there is no truth. This is what you call modern philosophy. They make you read so many things and hear so many various opinions, and all the opinions contradict each other, all the opinions counteract each other, counsel each other out. So that by the time a person finishes his philosophical education, then he concludes that there is no truth. So he goes from passion to ignorance. Passion, intelligence and passion means confused. And then intelligence and ignorance means it comes to the reverse conclusion of the actual reality. So they're becoming so bewildered, and then they're concluding there is no truth. There is no truth. So then as a result of thinking there is no truth, so now the intelligence is completely weak. Because in order for the intelligence to be strong, it has to have a purpose. It has to know where it's going. Just like if you're driving the car, you need to know where you're going. Then it's very easy to, reel in, pull in the senses and direct the senses toward your purpose. Right? The senses are always trying to do their own program. The senses are always trying to connect to their various sense objects. So they are always divided amongst each other. So an only way to bring them in is to have the intelligence has to be strong. And it is made strong by clarity on purpose. Then it just, even in the material sense, when a person goes to school and he knows why he's in the school, then he can reel in his senses to direct his senses toward his purpose of wanting to graduate. So his friends may invite him to the party, but if that doesn't assist his purpose, then he can actually resist that. He can actually pull the senses in. But when he doesn't know why he's there, he's just like trying to figure it out, then his senses will pull him everywhere and he becomes more and more weak. So everyone is basically weak now. Kali Yuga means all the jivas are weak because they have no purpose. And amongst devotees, they may be thinking that, you know, we know the purpose of life, but we have no faith. Without faith in the purpose, then you can also control the senses. Because if you don't believe that there's a Krishna, if you don't believe that there's something like, you know, prema, if you don't believe that you can attain it, then you cannot have the fixed determination to pursue it. So we should be knowing that the faith gives the strength to intelligence to continue on its path toward perfection. Just like the bird, Prabhupada gives the story of the sparrow who was trying to drink up the ocean. So obviously she has some pretty strong faith because she's a sparrow and the ocean is quite large. But that faith kept her determined, and later on she was able to gain the mercy of Krishna through his devotee, Garuda. So if he didn't, if she didn't have that faith, then she would not be able to continue such an impossible task. So without faith in the goal, or at least without purpose, then you cannot control the senses. There is no question of controlling the senses. The position of the self-realized person in chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita, the term that is used by Krishna to describe such a person is sthita pragya, which means one who has fixed intelligence. That is what the word actually means. To be self-realized essentially means to have a fixed intelligence on the actual goal of life. Then one can easily protect himself from being covered over by the avaranatmika shakti of maya. Otherwise, they cannot. So then you will find even amongst our devotees sometimes, they, because of lacking the faith to fix the determination and the pure progressive path towards pure devotion to Krishna, then you will find that we may also be entertaining, going to mundane programs of, you know, entertainment, just like when we were first joining Krishna consciousness, sadhu sangha meant going to the movies together, you know, and that was our sadhu sangha, you know, we go to the movie, at least we're in the association of devotees. And then, of course, because devotees, we are expert daksha, so we always can connect everything to Krishna, right? Yukta Vairagya. And so we go to the movies and we can see a perfect Krishna conscious message in any movie that we see because we're so expert. We're so good at seeing the relationship of everything to Krishna. So we go to the movies and we can see the connection. We go to the, you know, Cirque du Soleil and we can see the connection to Krishna there. We go to the, what do you say, the restaurants and we can see how, you know, the vegetarian restaurant, well, you know, they're in the mode of goodness, so we're going to elevate their offering to transcendence by offering to Krishna, you know, in our mind and taking the prasadam. Because we're so expert. We go to hear the mundane musical shows thinking that, oh, we'll take something from that and we'll learn how to add to our own Krishna consciousness. Everyone's thinking like this. Now, we never think that when, you know, Mother Jadarani, when she went to Srila Prabhupada and asked him, should I learn painting properly so that I can paint nice pictures? Because Mother Jadarani's paintings in the beginning, they look kind of like kiddie, you know? They were like quite kiddie. So like a kid did it, you know? It was kind of, anyway. So she asked Srila Prabhupada, should I learn properly, you know, the painting? And Prabhupada said, no, Krishna will help you. Keep painting and then Krishna will help you. Dadami Buddha Yogam Tam Yinamam Puyanti Te. That is the pure faith of a devotee, that Krishna will certainly assist me just by my continued effort to serve Krishna. You know, so problem is, if we don't have that faith, if we don't have that fixed intelligence, then the senses bind us to the material world. The senses in relationship to their sense objects work as chains, binding us to the material world. So we're discussing Dharatma, so he's misled by his misconception, which basically has two divisions, one that I am this body, and the other one that this world is mine. This world of sense objects is mine. So as a result of thinking oneself the body is made up of senses. So when one thinks I am the body, then one has to gratify the senses. That is the natural conclusion of such a conception. So such a person becomes attached to the sense objects. Now, the sense objects are just dead matter. The sense objects are not alive. This whole material world, it appears to be very threatening, but actually it's just dead matter. If you walk into a room of dead matter, you don't usually feel threatened by it, right? And usually no one feels threatened by, like, a chair is dead matter. You don't usually feel threatened by that because it's not alive. But a world of dead matter becomes a threat to us simply because of misconception that I'm the body. And now, as a such of misconception, I become attached to this dead matter. For example, if I'm fasting for the Ekadashi and I want to do nirjal, right? So, but I'm thinking I'm this body. So during nirjal, you feel a little bit weak. Then someone happens to put some juice right in front of your face and then leaves the room. You know, some nice mango drink is sitting there right in front of your face. And you're fasting, and you're feeling a little weak. You feel like I could eat something. I really, you know, maybe I should. And the mind will be preaching to you also. This is not very good. Don't you see how weak you're getting? You're getting dehydrated. You need to nourish the body. So then they put that drink in front of you, and they walk off. Now, the drink is not alive. Of course, in the case of prasadam, we might have. But anyway, this is a conventional example. The drink is not alive, but you become completely bound up by that drink. Even though it's not alive, you may be feeling that the drink is speaking to you. Prabhu, be reasonable. You're becoming very weak, huh? And I'm very good and delectable. Can't you smell that fragrance? Wow. Like that. And it's just, it's not even alive. It's not speaking to you. It's not, but just because of being misled by the conception that I'm the body, then one becomes bound by the senses which are trying to relate to their sense objects. It works as a chain. So in this way, due to one misconception that I'm this body, the whole material existence is a threat, even though it's not alive. Just because of the misconception, we're thinking, oh, Maya is binding us, or in the modern world, they think the 1%, they're exploiting us, they're binding us. But how do they bind us? How are they able to exploit us? All they're doing is creating more sense objects and then letting the sense objects do it. They don't have to do anything very special. Before, there used to be slavery. You know, that was like practical bondage. You could see it. They were on plantations. But now they saw that wasn't effective, because people will definitely rebel if you try to enslave them like that. So we need a more clever way of enslaving them. So then, mind you, the demons, they also know philosophy. If you read the Bhagavatam, all the greatest demons were very intelligent persons, philosophically speaking. They could probably give a killer Bhagavatam class if they wanted to. They probably could. Though, the fact of the matter is, they just didn't follow the Bhagavatam. That was all. So the demons, they think, well, what do I have to do to make sure these people remain enslaved? So they consider, well, they're thinking that they're their bodies, and therefore the goal of life is sense gratification. So let's just make a whole bunch of cool-looking sense objects, and that way the senses will bind them, and we don't have to do anything. And then we just train them up from the beginning, and we call it higher education. And we'll train them up through science, that there's no God, the evolution theory, that life is just an accident. There is no purpose to life. And just to make sure they remain more and more bewildered, we'll make them take so many classes. And in each class, we'll give them each 50 books to read. And then they'll read all those books, and their mind will become more and more bewildered. And then just to make sure that there's no chance of them getting out, we'll give them television. And then on television, we'll bombard them with millions and millions of advertisements. You know, something like 3,000 advertisements in one day. We'll bombard them. And then, and that way, their minds will be totally absorbed. We'll give them movies. We'll give them video games. And in the video games, they'll become progressively more and more violent and based on sex life. We'll train them up how to have illicit sex, and we'll call the class sex education. Sex education. Sex education means you have to tell the person how not to have sex. Otherwise, no one needs education. They've been doing sex life. All of us have been doing sex life since time immemorial. We don't require education. Sex education means how to stop sex life. That is sex education. But no, we'll train them up how to use the condoms. We'll even distribute them in the schools of higher education. And we'll make sure that they don't feel that they have any worth unless they do these things. We'll make it so that you can't even get a job as a janitor unless you got a bachelor's degree. And in this way, they become that misconception becomes reinforced, that I am this body, this world is mine. And they remain, the senses bind them to the material world, so that they cannot even perceive the actual reality that time is stealing away their life. It becomes a complete unconcern. So that's what Prabhupada is speaking about here. The word is used here, Stri Jitaha. Stri Jitaha means conquered by women. A woman means the epitome of sense gratification desires. So it basically means conquered by the sense objects. That's what it means. That's what it's talking about. So he collected money so he can enjoy his senses. Like we also collect money so we can enjoy the sense objects. So then it says here, strijitaha na vidhat. Not anvidhat. Avidhat means understand. So na avidhat means he cannot understand. Right? Because now imagine, as I've just described, the mind is so bewildered. And now the conception that I am this body has been reinforced. So now the senses are binding me so strong, avidat, I cannot even understand what is taking place. Pashanapinam pashyati, seeing but not seeing. Seeing that the body is growing old, is withering away, the body is becoming diseased. And I haven't achieved the happiness that I was looking for, the so-called happiness. Kutrashusha. Shruti Sukhav Nikrishni Rupa. Where is happiness in the material world? Simply in hearing about it. No one's actually got real experience of happiness long term. It's just simply in hearing about it. How, what it would be like if you're educated? What will it be like if you have money? What will it be like if you have women, etc.? So then one is thinking, just by hearing about it, that's what the advertisement is, right? It's the, by hearing about it, you create the image. And then the mind is enjoying the image of happiness, but actual happiness is not there. Migratrishni Rupa. Migratrishni Rupa means the image of a water in a mirage. There is no happiness in the water in the mirage, it's just the image of water. And so that image creates happiness upon seeing it. I have that experience when I went to the Burning Man event, which is in a desert near Reno. And then you really do see water. I saw it. You do see a mirage when you're out there so long and there's not much water is there. And it looks like people are walking there. So that even gives more confirmation to the truth of it. Because, you know, I was like seeing people walking towards the water, you know. So they gave more conviction. Yes, it's true. But there's no happiness in that image. It's just the happiness is just the scene of the image. But it's not ever the actual experience of the image. In the same way, the happiness in the material world is just by hearing about it, an image is created in the mind. That's what the hearing process is meant to do, even in Krishna consciousness, because we're in ignorance. We don't know about Krishna, Krishna Lok, and Krishna and his associates and the happiness of that. So the hearing process is meant to give a sense of it, create an image of it in the mind so that the mind will get actually purified by that. Until Krishna decides to manifest in real, his real, fully manifest self within the mind of the conditioned soul who has attained perfection by progressive sadhana practices. So you hear about these things and the image is created in the mind and the mind is enjoying the image. But then when he actually tries to pursue, he is not getting any happiness. The happiness that he gets in his pursuit is like the happiness he's already experiencing now, because both forms of happiness are polluted by the threefold miseries. So the experience will never be any different than what he's already experiencing right now. Just like now, you may be uneducated, then, and you're experiencing threefold miseries, and then when you get educated, you'll be experiencing threefold miseries. So the experience of happiness in both situations is exactly the same. So Prahlad Maharaj is saying, Kuta Kutra Shisha Shruti Sukha Mrikatrishni. Where is the happiness? Simply in hearing it and the image that you're seeing in your mind. That is it. That is the only real happiness in the material world, not an actual experience. Kwedham Kaleva Ramashesha Ruja Viroha. And what is this body? You're thinking this body is an instrument for enjoying the senses, but actually Ashesha Ruja Viroha. It is simply a place for breeding diseases. That is what the material body is. Nirvidyate natujano yadapiti vidwan. Those who are vidwan, little thoughtful, they can understand this very easily. It is not such a difficult thing to understand. But kamanalam madulavai. But they have this burning desire in their heart for sense gratification because they think they're the body. And therefore, madulavai, they'll take whatever they can get. Madulavai means a drop of honey, like we were hearing that story last night from Nityananda Prabhu. That one little drop of, I'll take whatever I can get. The situation is horrible, but I'll take whatever I can get because I'm this body. Just like in the fifth canto, it's mentioned that sometimes the conditioned soul, he can appreciate that this material world is miserable. He gains that appreciation by hearing from sadhus or by just experience. He can really appreciate, yeah, this is not a place of happiness. But due to his strong bodily concept of life, he is forced to continue to pursue it. So real education means to remove the crutch of misconception that keeps me thinking I'm the material body. So that is, otherwise, time is stealing away our life, and we cannot perceive it. And then, no matter how much we may philosophize about, here he's quoting Charvak. Charvak saying, don't be afraid, beg, borrow, steal, enjoy sin's gratification, don't worry about death. But who cannot worry about death? It is why the topic of death is such a taboo topic, because it is a great concern for the jiva that he has to die, because his nature is eternal. So it is of great concern he has to die. But okay, so then if you have an axe swinging over your head, it'd be hard to concentrate. Like suppose you're trying to eat your prasadam, and you have an axe swinging over your head by a thin thread that looks like it's kind of like peeling away. Then how will you be able to eat peacefully? How jai prasadam? You go, like this huge, you know, blade is swinging over your neck. So you're not going to be like comfortable going like this, you know? Any moment the thread may break and then head is chopped off. So how would it be possible for a person to honor prasadam with a huge blade swinging over their neck? How would that be possible? There's only two ways it could be possible. One way is he's just insane. He's just nuts, you know? He's a crazy person. And the other way it is made possible is by keeping the person distracted. Keep him distracted. They're so distracted that he forgets that this blade is swinging over his head. So if he's sufficiently distracted, then he can forget about that and pursue his various programs. So that is all modern life is all about. Just create distractions. They were calling it weapons of mass distraction. And their primary weapon is called modern education. They just simply keep one distracted enough so they can't perceive the reality. Therefore, they don't actually care for the words of the sadhus. And they continue to pursue rotten material life. And they continue to rot in the material world. And it's not that because we are devotees that the same truth does not apply to us. If we're not really understanding what is time. And Pingala's prayers, she makes a very beautiful point. I don't think it's Pingala. Or is it? I think it's Pingala. She makes a very beautiful point at the end of her prayers. She says, by realizing that we're all trapped by the serpent of time, then the Atma becomes qualified to become his own protector. That's a very interesting point. Because we're always saying, seek protection in Krishna, right? So you might get confused by that statement. Because at this time, she becomes a great devotee at the end. So she says, if we can realize that we're being caught by the serpent of time, she says the Atma becomes qualified to become his own protector. And how is that? What is the idea of that verse, as described in the purport? The Jiva becomes he protects himself by realizing the ephemeral nature of the material world, so he does not pursue it. And therefore, his energy can become vyavasayamika buddhi and become focused on the evolvement of pure love for Krishna. So he protects himself by realizing, just like sometimes devotees, we go to the Lord to pray for give me this, give me that, or take this away, take that away. It's like, just wait, it'll go away. Don't worry. Just wait. Sometimes we're having some maha problem. And then when the problem goes away, we think, oh, Krishna is so merciful. Yeah, Krishna is time factor. It is anyway going to go away. Whether you prayed for it or not, it was going to go away. Just like a person had a ring. This story is there where a person wanted the benediction that whenever I feel happy, I want to feel sad. Whenever I experience some happiness, then I should feel sad. And whenever some sadness comes, I should feel happy. So he went to some priest to ask for this benediction. So all the priests rejected him. What a nonsense person you are. So one priest said, I can fulfill your desire. Just come back after a few days. So after a few days, this man came back and he was given a gift, and the gift was a ring. And the man told him that whenever you're feeling any emotion, just read the inscription on the ring and you'll feel the opposite emotion. So then he went to a party, you know, and he was really enjoying good sense gratification at the party. So he said, okay, let me see with this ring, how this ring's gonna work. So he looked at the ring and read the inscription at the ring, and it had four words on it, this soon shall end. And then when he read that, he felt sad, you know. Oh, man. And then when he was feeling misery, then he looked at the inscription on the ring, and it said, this soon shall end. And then he felt happy. So this is the nature of the material world. There's no necessity to be praying to Krishna for all these things, you know, which is not really pure devotional prayer. It's not a pure devotional prayer to be going praying to Krishna to remove this impediment, remove that impediment. On the material platform. The real thing is how I can serve Krishna best. That is called anukul desire. The desire should be favorable for Krishna and service to Krishna, not service to our own difficulties in the material world and so on. So if we really want, so Pingala makes this beautiful point that if we can realize the actual ephemeral nature of this material world, you're qualified to protect yourself from material desires by that realization. Another story is a man who got the benediction that for every hair on his body, he would live for one lifetime of Lord Brahma. And Srila Prabhupada describes he was a very hairy sage. So, you know, for every hair on the body, just every hair on our head itself, you know. So then one time he had some disciples, and the disciples said, Guru Maharaj, you're just sitting out here in the cold and everything. We'll build you one bhajan kutir. And he said, no, everything is temporary. I'll soon be dead. And the disciples were like, what? He had the benediction to live for the lifetime of Lord Brahma for every hair on his body. And then he was thinking, soon I will be dead, so there's no need to build bhajan kutir. This is called realization. This is called realization. So if we can realize that, then we can start cultivating the anukul principle. But if we can't even get that realization, then it'd be very difficult to cultivate the anukul principle. Then we'll be in the name of, you know, yukta vairagya and, you know, connecting everything to Krishna, beginning ourselves implicated in material sense gratification, because we cannot realize the ephemeral nature of the material existence. So it is essential, critical. I like that word from Mahavishnu. He was always saying that every time he wanted to emphasize a point. So this is critical. I used to love that. It's critical that we get this realization. Kalosmi, time I am the destroyer of everything. Otherwise, there's no question of cultivating the anukul principle for real. It'd be a semblance of it. It won't be really favorable for Krishna. And as a result, we won't be able to get out of this material world. So we have the challenge of crossing over a great ocean of misconception. Daivyesha gunamayi mamamaya dharatya. This great ocean of maya is a great ocean of misconceptions. Because the modes of material nature, Krishna says this divine energy of mind composed of three modes is insurmountable. The modes of material nature manifest in the mind as various conceptions of life. So when Krishna says this is insurmountable, he says these misconceptions are insurmountable to overcome on your own strength. So what does he say? Mam eva ye prapadyante, but by surrender unto me. And what is the topmost program of surrender in Kali Yuga? Chanting Hare Krishna congregationally. Jiva Dhaya Krishna Nam Sarva Dharmasar, that the essence of all religious principles in the age of Kali is to show compassion towards the jivas who are drowning in an ocean of misconceptions. How we show compassion to them? By the loud chanting of Krishna Nam. Jiva Dhaya Krishna Nam Sarva Dharmasar. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I had the realization, I don't want to say realization, that's a little puffed up, presumptuous, but I had the, the experience yesterday when we were doing kirtan at the end, and I was seeing this man that I was talking to who was so bewildered by how he got so bewildered by all these various misconceptions that he was accumulating. So then I saw when we were doing kirtan, especially when the devotees were dancing. Dancing is part of the process, by the way, you know. Sitting down is okay, but dancing is part of the process. We should dance heavy if we want our anarchas to go. If we really want our anarchas to go, we should dance heavy. Then Nitai is most merciful. That's why you see me, I always screaming Nitai's name these days, because Nitai is most merciful. He's even more merciful than Lord Chaitanya. And if Nitai sees, because Nitai used to get down, and he's crazy, therefore he's called Avadut. If Nitai sees you dancing you know, putting your heart into it, then Nitai will definitely show kindness towards such a, even if it's just a semblance of devotion. Nitai will, just because you're pretending to dance for Lord Chaitanya's pleasure, then he will show kindness. Sadhana bhakti means pretending to have devotion for Krishna. Sadhana is pretense, practically speaking. I mean, this is according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And Bhakti Tattva Vivek, he says sadhana means bhakti abhas until we come to higher levels of realization. So practically speaking, it is like pretending. So then anyone who's doing sadhana bhakti, you know, more or less, you know, pretentious devotion to Krishna, having so many anartas, so many selfish desires to be fulfilled. But we dance heavy in the kirtan, Nitai sees that, then he will show kindness toward us. So I was getting this experience yesterday when I was seeing the kirtan, and I saw this young man, he was observing the kirtan. And I could see how he was just looking so happy to see the devotees chanting and dancing. I'm sure he forgot all his misconceptions, probably went running off. So I was meditating on this verse after the kirtan, Daivyesha Gunamayi Mamamaya Dharatiya, how we're bound up by these various misconceptions of life that that keeps our senses binding us to the material world. But Mam Eva Ye Prapadyante, or Nam Eva Ye Prapadyante, if we surrender to the real process of this Kali Yuga, you know, congregational chanting of Hare Krishna, then I was saying how all the misconceptions can get shattered just by that seeing that that faithful performance word, a picture kirtan. You may not be remembering this because we don't pay attention to the seminar so much, but when Srila Prabhupada Maharaj for the Holy Name Retreat last year, he was giving a lot of discussion from Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So he was talking about this apeksha kirtan. Apeksha kirtan means with the hope, hopeful kirtan. I even asked a question. I was like, well, this quality of hope usually doesn't manifest until the stage of bhava, so how do we can do that? And Maharaj said, no, at whatever stage you're at, hope me, for the mercy of Krishna shall descend. So apeksha kirtan has a lot of shakti, because we have hope that Krishna will give his kindness to us. Hope that at least if Krishna won't be so kind, at least Nitai and Gaur will be certainly very kind. They've come for the fallen jivas of this world. So apeksha kirtan, performing kirtan, it has a lot of power. And therefore, when Lord Chaitanya wanted to instill faith in people, he would do it through mass Harinam Sankirtan. Because it's very easy to instill faith. People don't even know they're getting faith. Just they see that all the devotees chanting and dancing, and then they also feel inclined to participate. Then when you start to speak about Christian consciousness right after that, they hear you without any argument half the time. Most of the time, unless they're envious during the kirtan. But if they're like just innocent persons, then they see that a picture kirtan is being done, you know, then it has so much power to shatter all these misconceptions. Otherwise, everyone is drowning. I was feeling really, when I was talking to this person yesterday, I was feeling drained out. I only spoke to him for about 15 minutes, but I was just like, God, it was so depressing. And I was saying, like, the devotee, he's unbewildered because Mama Vyaya Prapadyante, he just fixes his consciousness on Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, Harinam Sankirtan. So someone's coming up with some new idea, he's not bewildered. So this is Secret to Success. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions? Anyone wants to ask anything? It's about 5 minutes, 7 minutes.
How does non-devotional association kind of work into our fixed determination to serve Krishna, you know, and kind of, we have this idea we want to be devotees, but then through our various activities in life, we're inevitably coming across non-devotional association. If you could just speak a little bit about that.
Well, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes in that Bhakti Lok book, so you'll see there on the discussion of Jana Sangha, he brings up the same question that, well, we're not supposed to associate with non-devotees. The whole world is filled up with non-devotees. So how are we going to practice this principle? So then he describes that what is meant by association does not mean coming in contact with non-devotees. He says what is meant by association is the principle of the dati pratigrinati, guhyam akyati prichati, bhungte bojjyate chayva, shavidem pritilakshanam. These six loving exchanges should not be done with non-devotees. If these six loving exchanges are done with non-devotees, then he says, then that is called janasangha. But just to come in contact with materialistic persons and deal with them in a dutiful way is not called janasangha. Of course, it's not that we should be practicing it out. Because, see, the problem is that, you know, in a lot of ways, we are also non-devotees. So that means we have a lot of the same dispositions as many of them do in the matter of aversion towards Krishna. So it can easily, in such a sangha, we can easily, again, be totally overwhelmed by our fruit of desires for independence and enjoyment. So generally, it is advised that one should live in a secluded place. And what is meant by seclusion is within the association of persons who are performing, you know, devotional service, pure devotional service. And as far as possible, shun such unnecessary non-devotional sangha. Now, if it becomes necessary, like in terms of preaching, or if someone has to go to the workplace, like that, then one has to, of course, be attentive. One of the qualities of a devotee is mentioned as apramatta. I was reading this morning in the Bhagavatam. Apramatta means not crazy. The way it was translated was alert. So one of the qualities of a devotee is that they're alert. So alert, be alert to our consciousness when we're associating with such persons. We have to be attentive to how our consciousness is moving. You know, just like in the Bhagavad Gita, it's described how the self-realized person, even though he's eating, sleeping, evacuating, his senses are coming in contact with the sense objects, he's ever detached. And the way Prabhupada talks about that in the purport, very beautifully, like a practical point he makes, is that the deliberations of the devotee is changed. His deliberations are changed. So even though he's, you know, contacting the senses with their sense objects, he's not affected because his deliberation is something else. His deliberation is on Krishna. Or when contacting with non-devotees, then our deliberation should be how to show kindness toward them by helping them move progressively toward Krishna. Even though we may be sometimes appearing to be joking, all these things, but the deliberation of the devotee is fixed. Therefore, it says the devotee is also gambhira. He's deep, like an ocean. You cannot understand what he's thinking. Because externally, he'll be looking like he's just doing something mundane, but he's very deep and very fixed. That's why I was telling you all, like with Madhava Maharaj, I always found him, he's an extraordinary personality. And he's very jolly, but if you see his eyes, you can see like some very deep deliberations are going on, you know? And of course, when he speaks to you, then you can really understand. So when we are dealing with such persons by obligation, then we have to be alert and grave. Grave does not mean a mean face. Grave does not mean a grumpy or bad attitude. Grave simply means deliberating on the welfare of the individual in terms of assisting them in their moving progressively toward Krishna. And then if we notice that our consciousness is shifting a little bit in the wrong direction, then we get out of that situation immediately. Like we have to deal with family members sometimes. Then we see they're not very favorably disposed towards our Krishna conscience. Then we should just deal with them cordially, as, you know, like a mundane son, being ever alert to our maintaining the treasure of our heart, the desire to serve Krishna. So like that, so, you know, spiritual life is definitely, it's a practice. Is that sufficient? Anyone else wants to ask anything? A couple of minutes are left. No? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.